Hello, I'm Hina Santry, and welcome to the Women in Surgery Committee of the American College of Surgeons podcast. Today, we have A.J. Copeland from the Uniform Services University in Bethesda, Maryland, and Sherry Wren from Stanford University in Palo Alto, California, who are both governors of the college. How are you doing today?
Fine, thank you, Hina.
Nice to see you.
So many surgeons go through the initiation process and become fellows of the college. While they meet the standards of fellowship in daily practice and proudly display FACS among their credentials, you two have done more and become deeply involved in the college. Why?
Well, I think the college is an opportunity to participate in the big surgery, the big tent of surgery. It's an opportunity to fellowship with other surgeons, not just in your local or regional area, but nationally. An opportunity to give back to the college, to participate in a number of their programs.
How about you, Sherry?
I agree with AJ for many of those things. I also think that participating within the college gives you an opportunity to impact surgery really on a more national level than any other body that we have. And so trying to be in a place where you can try to steer the course of American surgery, I think, can be very important.
What are some examples of where you think, in your role as a governor, you've been able to make an impact on a national scale?
One of my roles is as an executive on the board of the Executive Committee of the Board of Governors. I actually am the lead for the quality and optimal patient care pillar. And I think if you look at what is happening in American surgery right now, quality, how are we going to measure quality, how does that impact your reimbursements, how does it impact our patients, is a critical subject. So really being in at the ground level of these discussions and policy making, I think, is a big role for people who want to do that.
Mm-hmm. And starting with you, AJ, how did you end up on the Board of Governors?
Well, there's two paths to becoming a governor, basically. One is to come up through the chapters, and another is to be nominated by your specialty society. And it's the latter that I'm the governor for the Association of Women Surgeons. So I spent about 10 years or so on the AWS Council, including being a president of the national organization, and then was selected to be a governor by my specialty society. Governor is you're elected for a three-year term. The Board of Governors does expect you to for that term to be renewable and would prefer you actually to serve for 6 years because it takes you just a couple years to kind of get up to speed and figure out what your role is. The Board of Governors has directed the new governors to select a committee to join or represent. I'm on the Women in Surgery Committee and also on the Surgical Training Work Group part of the education pillar. So I have those two roles as a governor.
And when you become a governor through a specialty association, is there any kind of specific mandate or even a tradition of representing any specific aspects of that particular organization, or do you function just as any of the other governors would?
Well, I think you function as a governor, again, serving on the committees and so on, as any other governor would. There's also the role of being a liaison between that specialty society or chapter and the Board of Governors as a whole.
You pointed to Sherry when you mentioned chapter. Is that how you became part of the Board of Governors, Sherry?
Yes, so I came through the other pathway, which is I started being active in our local chapter when I moved up to Northern California, which is where I am a governor from. I started attending the chapter meetings. Eventually, I started running the program, did that for a couple years, got on the council, and then was elected chapter president. And after serving as chapter president, was selected by the Northern California chapter to represent them on the Board of Governors. And I do take very strongly the sense that this is sort of a representational democracy and that I do need to represent Northern California's views when I sit at the table for the governors, because as we are all well aware, there's regional differences of opinions about many different things, and I take my role as the Northern California governor very seriously. And one of the tasks of a governor is to actually do the annual survey to their local members. So you actually do know what your local constituents are thinking about things.
Mm-hmm. And so what kinds of things get asked in this survey? What kinds of feedback are you eliciting from the local membership?
Well, it's actually all the governors, society governors also use the same survey tool. The survey tool's been in place for a number of years and is a kind of slowly morphing tool. A lot of it is about practices, things that political or advocacy questions, that where's your level of concern with these things, training questions. So it's a fairly broad-based survey.
I think one of the purposes of it is to kind of get a sense for the college of what are the priorities in terms of issues for the college to address on a national level.
So it sounds like the activities of the governors overall really help the college as an association meet the needs of its membership at the grassroots. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, I really believe that the college is, the governors is sort of really representational democracy, which is you are representing your constituents, whether it be your society, because societies have different agendas, or your region, and bringing that voice really to the table, especially when you look at it. I mean, there's governors from every specialty. There's ENT governors, ophthalmology, plastics, et cetera. So, you know, it's a really wide voice that's representing American surgery.
And have you found that when initiatives or new ideas come out of the Board of Governors, in your experience, that the college leadership has been receptive to implementing some of these changes?
I think if you look at some of the things, I mean, the whole Operation Giving Back came out of an initiative of the governors. There's been other initiatives that are really moving forward. Yeah, I think that you can absolutely have a voice and a role in moving agendas forward. Now, clearly there's certain agendas, especially I think more of the advocacy ones, that the college moves forward and they then have to go to the Congress, et cetera, and that's obviously difficult for the college to achieve full closure on those things because it's out of their purview. I think, you know, right now in the next, we're all talking about the SGR and what's going to happen with that. But clearly the college solicits input into what is the advocacy platform that the college is going to support.
And you would say that the Board of Governors have a significant amount of feedback in that end, but it's just not necessarily easy to execute?
I mean, yes, the Board of Governors has a large amount of impact in that, but
it's ultimately in the hands of Congress.
Yes,
exactly,
ultimately out of our hands.
Exactly,
as
yeah.
we sit here in Washington, I'm not sure how anything gets done.
Exactly. In fact, that's one of the reasons why we're all here together.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're here to advocate on behalf of our patients in front of Congress. And this happens to be the weekend with the very kind of backhanded SGR situation happening in Congress. And the senators are going to vote on it right while we're all in town. So that is a little bit up in the air. But it's, you know, good to hear that the Board of Governors is one way that, you know, the members of the college can have their opinions and ideas, both on legislative matters at the federal level, but also on, you know, issues that affect our practice and affect our ability to provide patient care.
I think it's also important, you know, coming from California, which if you just look at advocacy issues and talk about medical malpractice liability, coming from California, that's not really a subject that most Californians worry about because we've had MICRA protection for so many years. Now, we do have a bill coming up that is looking at taking away MICRA. But when I talk to colleagues that you meet at the governor from around the country, you realize, you know, I'm operating in a very different state than other people, and they're having a lot more stresses and everything about some of these. So I think it's really good to see that, you know, we're the atmosphere that you operate in is very unique to your local, and coming and participating in the governors and really hearing about it, you get a much broader and sort of a pan-United States view of issues as opposed to just your regional view.
Mm-hmm. And could you speak at all, AJ, to some issues that are very pertinent to the Association of Women Surgeons that that the, you know, Board of Governors at large have been able to move forward?
Well, in my role as the liaison and the governor to the Women in Surgery Committee, I think all the things that we have done as a committee are putting forth the advocating for for women, or increased diversity, increased roles of women in the leadership roles of the college. And we've seen some of that, I think, over the last few years been implemented. There's still a long way to go, particularly in, as we were talking before that we started recording here, in terms of increased representation of women on the Board of Governors coming up from the chapter route. So I think there is a, you know, sort of a never-ending need to keep the importance of having diversity in leadership positions of the college on the front burner.
Mm-hmm. So both of you are obviously very busy clinicians, and you have activities through your local chapter, the Association of Women Surgeons, and probably many, many other professional organizations. And clearly, your involvement in the Board of Governors is an additional time commitment on top of everything else that you're doing. And, you know, everyone's very busy personal lives as well. And so obviously, there's been some meaning that has been provided to you as an individual, as a professional, as a woman surgeon by participating in the college and the Board of Governors. And I know it's sometimes really hard to kind of describe it, but I was wondering if you guys could maybe, you know, give a stab at what being a governor has meant for you personally.
I think for me, being a governor, first of all, is an opportunity to meet and network with a wide range of other surgeons and professionals that I just would have no access to, you know, by geography, by time. And so it's really been a great opportunity to get to meet and know other people. And this is a critical thing. This is what fellowship is supposed to be. And, you know, you meet and talk about different subjects with a wide variety of people. I think it gives a lot of meaning. Also, being able to work to make changes in society that are important to me is something worth spending my time on. And I think being a governor, being in the leadership of any organization, allows you that opportunity to push certain agendas forward. So, you know, if you look at the Women in Surgery Committee, over the years, we've been able to really put forth panels at the college that really, I think, further the agenda of the committee about diversity and different practice styles through, you know, the raising of funds for things like Olga Jonasson Lecture. We can showcase speakers that really speak to a certain agenda. So to me, you know, I think the world of surgery is bigger than the super oil tanker that takes, you know, probably a month to execute a turn, unless you saw that movie, Mr. Phillips, and they seem to do it quite rapidly then. But we're trying to nudge and change surgery into, I think, what my vision of surgery should be. That's why it's worth my time to work on.
How about you, AJ?
I couldn't agree more, and I don't really have a lot to add to what Sherry said. It's certainly an honor to serve as a governor, to be chosen by your society or your chapter, and I echo her comments that I take it very seriously, and value my participation in the Board of Governors and the Women in Surgery Committee, as well as the Surgical Training Work Group that I participate in. Which is sort of just getting started, that is clearly something that has been, I'm sure some contributions will come out of that participation as well.
And so do you find that the work that you do with the governors, you can align with some of your expertise anyway? For example, AJ, are you already very active in educational initiatives? Are you a surgical educator?
I am. I'm a clerkship director, and I've been involved in education as an effort for quite some time, so that does align with that.
And Sherry, you mentioned earlier that you are the chair of the pillar that focuses on quality and patient safety. And is that also something, in other words, through your volunteer efforts, you don't have to sort of create a whole new skill set? Are you able to work with things that you would already consider your strengths?
Yeah, it's funny. Over the last few years, more than a few years, I guess, dealing with quality issues and actually running, having programs for quality initiatives that we are actually even bringing to publication. So I think it's obviously an area that I find of personal interest, professional interest, scholarship interest, and then, you know, being able to look at it as this big issue. you know, it's very funny as you mature in your career and doing things like one of my jobs at one of the hospitals is I actually have to author our general surgery practice guidelines. So who can get privileges? What's the document going to look like? And I think the governors have a lot of influence and what is the scope of practice for general surgery. Everything in my life eventually meshes together. But I think part of it is it's things I feel, I do this because I feel passionate about these issues.
AJ, you mentioned a little while back that, you know, in being selected by the AWS as a governor, can both of you speak a little bit towards what is that process like? How are you selected? Is there an election? Do you nominate yourself? What are the different steps?
So I think that I was nominated by other people in my organization after I had concluded my time on the council. Why I was selected was because I had worked hard and accomplished many things during my term on the council of the AWS. In other words, I wasn't a passive participant. I, you know, took on issues and worked hard on them and accomplished things. And, you know, we were talking about that before the podcast as well, that that's, you know, it's not just showing up. You have to, you know, show up and speak up and volunteer to do things and do them and accomplish them, and that if you have this demonstrated record of volunteer accomplishments and service, then that speaks to your organization that you will be effective and an appropriate choice as a governor.
Did the membership of the Association of Women Surgeons vote on you versus other people for governor, or?
No, I was selected by the council.
Okay, so there's sort of a group of leaders within the Association of Women Surgeons who look at other people within the leadership who have the traits that you've displayed, and then they might think that that'd be a good fit.
Correct.
For the governor.
Right, so there was my name was put forth as the primary, and then there was also an alternate that was nominated.
Okay, so at any given time for an association, there's just one governor representing any specific association?
I think that's true.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
And I think the nomination process by each different society that has a governor is unique to this. So I also am on the Leadership Council of the Pacific Coast Surgical, and I can tell you that we just went through our nominating process for a governor. And basically each of our regions within that put forth a name that came out of their council, and then it's kind of voted on by the executive council. So names are solicited broadly. Now in the chapters, that's a totally different process. And there's no single answer to it because there's so many different chapters.
So each chapter sets it up uniquely.
Each chapter has their entire set of rules of how it's done. So basically the American College of Surgeons office sends to a chapter saying, you know, like my position, I stopped being a governor this October. My term is up. I've had 6 years. So I will need to be replaced. So Northern California chapter will be told that they have to replace me as a governor. And you have to submit a primary name and an alternate because it's actually the college who will pick in the end. And we're that process. So in our chapter now, that goes through the council of the chapter.
And does the chapter have also just one governor at any given time, or?
So the number of governors per state is based on population. So there'll be some chapters that may have one governor. I think Northern California has six, if I remember.
And
so
when you're densely populated, but populated by surgical patients or populated by surgeons? So is it the surgeon membership in the chapter?
Surgeon membership.
By FACS members.
By FACS.
Okay, so it's the density of fellows of the college in any specific geographic region.
That determines how many governors that region gets.
Okay.
So you can imagine a small state may just have one or two governors. California and New York and Texas, Florida being, you know, the largest populated states, are going to have more governors.
Whereas an association, whether you have 300 members or 15,000 members, would only have one?
There's actually, there is a minimum number of
fellows that the organization must
have. And there's even a strange rule that to be given a governorship, those fellows can't be represented by another entity. So there's, as you can imagine, a whole book of rules that go with
right.
How this happens. And I don't want to misquote them, but you know, it's in the last couple of years, it was, I think critical care came up. Should they have their own governor, mm-hmm. or are they represented? Are those governors already represented?
Say by one of the trauma associations.
By one of the trauma associations,
I see.
Et cetera.
Okay. So the three of us today couldn't just start an organization of people interested in the color blue scrubs and then automatically get a governor.
No.
Okay.
There's a whole process.
And there's a threshold of FACS members to meet.
There's a threshold. You actually have to apply. Why your group should get a governorship.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's actually a formal vetting.
And how many times a year do the governors, this whole big, large, you know, representative group, meet in person?
So we're now meeting twice a year. It's everybody should be able to come, if at all possible, to the Clinical Congress in October. That's really the largest of the meeting. But the meeting that we're at right now, the spring leadership meeting, is sort of now turning into a secondary group. Now, there's so much work that's going on, though, throughout the years. When you're on one of these work groups, you're having work group phone calls. We have pillar phone calls. So I think with the reorganization that happened in the last, really it's just been implemented now, but really the last 2 years we've been reorganizing the college along the same, or the governors along the same divisional lines as the college was organized, there's a lot of participation now. So as the lead for the pillar quality group, I can tell you I have three work groups. They're meeting every couple months by telephone. We're actually having an in-person meeting here. We'll have another in-person meeting in October. So there's a lot of opportunity.
I think there's a lot of energy that has come out of the realignment, but basically creating committees and work groups that are actually charged with doing something.
Every work group now will have a work product, whether that's a paper. I mean, if you look at the physician competency in health, it used to be a committee, now it's a work group. I mean, they're the people who wrote the burnout paper. I mean, there's real work that comes out of these groups.
And so the work, you meet in person as a large group twice a year, if at all possible. Right.
Yeah.
And then, but a lot of the work is being done remotely. In other words, you come together
offline.
Through,
yeah.
you know, tech, like a phone or web-based communication or something.
We do webinars with the governors. There's governor webinars, and then there's work group phone calls.
Yeah.
So it's actually, I would say the reorganization that was really spearheaded by Lena Napolitano really re-energized the governors and the structure.
And from what you're both saying today, it sounds like this new reorganization has really allowed the work products to be, you know, kind of, there's more clarity to what the work products should be, and it's allowing people to really get things done and execute on these work products.
And I think there's an express statement of expectations. I having been a governor pre-organization, I don't know, AJ, if you were.
I was not.
Yeah, so I can kind of speak to both sides. Kind of pre-organization, when I became a governor, I wasn't really sure what I was supposed to be doing in some ways. It was sort of, you showed up at a meeting, you were, you know, it just, I think there was a core group of people who got stuff done, but now everybody is tasked to join a work group. A work group has a work product, so I think it's a much more vibrant, and people are looking to see these. I mean, one of my groups is looking at a very contentious, controversial, but timely matter, which is the aging surgeon and competence assessment. I mean, this is going to be a critical thing. My hospital is actually one of the ones that put forth that mandatory assessment at a certain age. They're having a lawsuit about it right now. So, I mean, these things are all coming, and so one of our work groups is actually going to be the expert at how this is going to be done.
And so then hospitals at the local level don't need to recreate the wheel every time
right.
they're trying to think about, you know, a surgeon who's reached a certain age or whose tremor has gotten, you know, visible to a certain extent, you know, those kinds of things. So that's a really impactful.
Or cognitive issues,
yeah.
et cetera. And who knows? I mean, you know, perhaps you could envision at some point in time that the college itself or the college through an affiliation through something like the American Board would be the sort of imprimatur body that says, yes, you're fine, and then the hospitals would hopefully
accept that.
But, you know, that's all to be determined. But, I mean, this is a real here and now issue that's coming out of the governors. This is not really being done by anybody else within the college.
And there's certainly no specific, you know, other organization anywhere in organized surgery that would be addressing this specifically.
No, so. And clearly if we don't address it, our hospital staff bylaws have now put, this is being addressed at local levels.
Yeah.
So it's something that's coming, and you know, the college, I think, should be the leader in it.
Right, and so it makes sense to get out in front of issues like that, and just as a principle, I think the reorganization of the Board of Governors has been able to harness all the energy of all these people, the 270 governors, there's a lot of people, and you know, to put them to work doing some things, you know, concrete and specific and deliverable, I think is a great.
And the college has been very, the college has consultants, so some of these groups actually have expert consultants who come in these types of issues. So on the burnout issues, there were some consultants who were not surgeons because they have an expertise that's necessary to fully understand issues. So the college has been very generous in allowing that type of external consultation.
So they have empowered you to do your work even better by giving you the expertise that you may not necessarily have.
Right.
So it sounds like a fantastic experience for both of you from the point of view, you know, of an individual professional, but also the global sort of opportunity for the House of Surgery, so to speak. It seems like something, you know, certainly I sitting here fairly new in my career would want to aspire to, you know, a way to focus on things that excite me already, but give back in a larger way than one patient at a time.